The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at Position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at Position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
From the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high-tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high-tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick note, we're heading out as soon as we get off the air this afternoon. We're running out and hopping on a plane to New York City, where we'll be doing the program live from the Republican National Convention Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Right into the belly of the beast. Should be entertaining. Louise is going with me, and Rama Schneider is going to be here ably running the board and engineering the program and perhaps hopping in if disasters happen. And also for today and for the following 3 days, rather than having those of you who are listening on the web, I just tossed this caveat in. Most of you who are listening on radio stations across the country, this is not something that will probably make a whole lot of sense to you, so just very quickly explain. Most of our terrestrial radio stations put on their own newscast or carry a newscast at the top of the hour. On our satellite feed that we feed out to stations and also that we feed out to the web, we insert our own newscast or a newscast from Workers Independent News Service. I know at least one of our radio stations carries that as well. And our web stations like radiopower.org and Cable Radio Network carry that as well. And so those of you, and I know, you know, radiopower.org, I mean, it's, typically, you know, we'll have as many as 10,000 listeners over the course of an hour or over the course of a program. So for those of you who are listening on the web and are used to hearing news at the top of the hour, today through Thursday, you're going to hear Leonard Cohen singing his song Democracy is Coming with an announcement that we're going to be at the RNC. Don't worry. The news will be back on Friday. It's just that we're not going to be here to reprogram the day's news every day, and we figured that would be better than giving you the same stale news for four solid days. That would start to sound very strange. And as I said, if you're listening on one of our regular affiliates, odds are you're hearing news from that affiliate, and so it won't make any difference. So that's a little bit of just kind of taking care of business stuff there. Just got back from Santa Fe. You probably heard our broadcast from Santa Fe on Monday. What a wild ride. That was amazing. We had a theater of 350 people. It was put on actually by a group called GreatMystery.org, which does remarkable conferences all over the country. And by coincidence, they happen to be based in Santa Fe. And so they were charging, like, I think it was $20 admission to get in. And they sold out 2 weeks in advance.
We had, boy, it was a hoot. It was just fascinating. 350 people in this large theater. And we were talking about corporate personhood and democracy and the issues that we talk about here on the radio every day. And to those of you who listen on KTRC in Santa Fe who showed up, thank you so much for all of for so many of you, to so many. We had actually people literally flying in from California, from cities out on the East Coast. People showed up from all over the place. And I'm very grateful. We'll be doing the program in a couple of weeks from Grand Rapids. As well, as I said, which tomorrow will be in New York. Also, on Wednesday of this week, day after tomorrow, we're going to be screening in New York City at the Florence Gould Hall. That's at 55 East 59th Street. A brand new movie called This Land Is Your Land, another one of these many documentaries. Naomi Klein is in this one. Mark Caskey, the guy who sued Nike in the famous Caskey versus Nike case that made its way all the way to the Supreme Court. Mark Caskey is going to be in it. Jim Hightower, who you hear on this program, will be there. Tom Frank, the guy who wrote the What's the Matter with Kansas. Granny D, the woman who walked all the way across the United States for campaign finance reform, she'll be there. And I'll be there. And I'm in the movie as well. So that screening is in New York City on Wednesday. Those of you who happen to be there, if you want information, you can call the box office at 212-355-6160. And there'll be a Q&A session afterwards where quite a few of us, myself included, will be there and live talking with people who come to see the screening of the movie. So that should be entertaining. Our number, 1-866-889-8894, if you have thoughts, comments, rants, things you want to bring up, questions, concerns, whatever, right here. And, of course, you'll be able to call that number as well while we're in New York. And the website, www.tomhartmann.com. You can drop into our chat room, our live chat room, full of folks already. Anyhow, let's get to the news. And enough of all this, here's what's going on stuff, or here's how it's had this process stuff. Let's get to content. The Broward Supervisor of Elections. This falls into the, they're up to it again, folks. They're up to it again. They're getting ready. The Broward Supervisor of Elections, Brenda Snipes, is facing sharp criticism, writes David Sirota, the Center for American Progress, facing sharp criticism for her decision to hire a law firm with close ties to the Republican Party to represent the nonpartisan, supposedly, supervisor's office in the upcoming elections. You get this? I mean, the hen house, proverbially, being the elections, being the vote, the ballot, the count, the quality of the list, who can vote, the quality of who voted and how and where and all that sort of thing. Of course, the supervisor of elections is responsible for making sure that it's fair and it's clean and it's honest. And already in Florida, in this banana republic run by the brother of the president, who many people question even the validity of his vote, because so many of the votes in the last election, you still had 30,000-40,000 African Americans who were not allowed to vote, who legally had the right to vote, who got purged from the list in 2000 and have not yet been put back on. Plus, as Greg Pallas so brilliantly documented, in many of the African-American communities, even where they had voting machines, electronic voting machines, which were supposedly, solving the confusion problem, they would get mysteriously unplugged halfway through the day and lose all their votes. Machine failures, for some reason, they had a very, very high rate of machine failures only in the black districts. And this one, the cons can't blame on, the old racists saw, oh, it's those dumb black people is what the cons say. No, sorry, the machines themselves were not working in these areas. Not that many people believe that nonsense anyway. Oh, the ballot was just too confusing for them. Yeah, right. Come on, give me a break. No, it's the system is rigged. And so anticipating that and why would they anticipate this? Well, maybe because they're planning something. Anticipating problems in advance, the Broward Supervisor of Elections, Brenda Snipes, has already hired a lawyer. And the lawyer, she, by the way, was a political appointee by Governor Jeb Bush. Is this starting to sound like Guatemala or something? You know, it's your basic banana republic. Anyhow, she was appointed by Governor Jeb Bush. She hired the law firm Blosser and Safey in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, several months ago to represent her in the event of any election-related litigation. Turns out that Justin Safey, who is the partner in that law firm, is the former spokesman for Governor Bush. Not only is he the former spokesman for the governor, he's currently the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign in Broward County, Florida, where he's representing the supervisor of elections. His partner, James Blosser, was the local finance chair for Jeb Bush's 1998 gubernatorial campaign and is a top fundraiser for President Bush's re-election campaign. Here we go again. I'm telling you, they are, you know, we reported on this show, and I have not seen it anywhere in the national press, although it was reported on some print news sites, but I have not seen or heard anywhere except on this program, to the best of my knowledge, in the radio and television, audio and video media. The great purge of the vote that just happened in Hamilton County, Ohio, similar to that happened in Florida. So, it's going to be a tough one, and you know, it's so many people in Florida were buffaloed. You know, they thought that there was like this local uprising. Remember all those people banging on the windows, going, you know, stop the count. Remember? And it wasn't until after the count had been stopped, and George W. Bush had hired himself a trial lawyer and sued Al Gore before the Supreme Court to stop the count, that anybody bothered to look at the photograph of those people who were banging on the doors and windows of the people who were counting the vote, and discovered that the people who were banging on the doors and the windows bore an uncanny resemblance, an eerie resemblance, to staffers of Tom DeLay, the congressman from Texas. And, in fact, a few days later, sure enough, they discovered that it was members of Tom DeLay's staff who had been flown down to Florida to stage a riot, trying to make it look like, you know, it's the local folks. And, of course, it not only wasn't the local folks, had nothing to do with the local folks. I think the local folks very much would have liked to have had the vote counted, but Tom DeLay certainly didn't want the vote counted, so he flew his staff down to Florida. To the best of my knowledge, it's never been decided at whose expense, most likely yours and mine, to bang on those. So, and then James Baker, you know, the lawyer for this thing, the lawyer who put this thing together, he's over in Europe, and he makes the crack that I'm the guy who fixed the 2000 election for George W. Bush. And you'll recall, he was the one who was out there, you know, being the spokesman for the Bush campaign and pushing all this stuff. So, pretty amazing. Strange times we live in. 1-866-889-8894. Let's let Armin have his say here. Hey, Armin in Florida, what's up?
Yes, if you go to rense.com, rents.com, rense.com, there's an article that Greg Pallas put up there, and it's a little different than the one you just described.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, the best place to find it is at gregpallas.com, P-A-L-A-S-T, gregpallas.com. Find
the
original.
The article that is up there now that I didn't hear you mention is about Teresa Laforte.
Mm-hmm.
And she's supervisor of elections at Palm Beach County.
Yeah, she's in my stack here. I'm going to get to her.
Okay, we're just beginning. This lady,
but you're right.
Arbitrarily, she wants to reserve the right to exclusively certify her own vote for that position.
That's right. She's running in Florida. She's running for an office, and she's going to count her own vote. And not only that, she's asking people to write on the outside of the envelopes their party affiliation. I'll lay the details out for it, Armin. Don't worry. We'll get to that. I appreciate your call. Always good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
A And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The website, by the way, for the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, one of our sponsors, is www.cascr.org, cascar.org. I noticed that for reasons as yet unfigured out, we're at the tail end of Mercury being retrograde here. the .org got clipped off their ad, so make sure that they're in there. Thanks to our sponsors, by the way, Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, and Futurist Benjamin Krim, 1-888-242-8272. Okay, here's the story. On Friday, Teresa Lepore, this is from Greg Palast, supervisor of elections in Palm Beach, another supervisor of elections here in sunny Florida, candidate for re-election as supervisor of elections, chose to supervise her own election. No one allowed. This Tuesday, Florida voters votes for these nominally nonpartisan positions. She's the woman, by the way, who designed the butterfly ballot, and all the cons said, well, gee, it was a Democrat who did it. Well, it turned out she'd been a Republican, then she became a Democrat. She designed the butterfly ballot, and now she's become a Republican again. She's got a lot of people scratching her head. And she began counting the absentee votes on Friday in her own re-election race. The law, Greg Palast points out, requires that she certify poll watchers. But she has a better idea. She refused to do so. Not one. She's going to count her own votes, thank you very much. Oddly, 37,000 people have requested absentee ballots, but she says there's only 22,000 that she's gotten back, and she's not going to release the list. She has no intention of counting all the ballots received, says Greg Palast. She's reserved for herself the right to determine which ballots have acceptable signatures. Interesting. How would she know? Well, Greg Palast says, well, she's printed party affiliation on the outside of each return envelope. That certainly makes it easier to figure out which ballot is valid, doesn't it? Notes Palast somewhat ironically, sarcastically, cynically. Anyhow, this is... The Republicans in Florida, actually, have sent out letters and email to people telling them to be sure to vote absentee because you can't trust the machines. Yes, the Republicans in Florida, which makes you wonder what's going on here. 1-866-889-8894. Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program. What's up?
Hey, thanks, Tom. I just had a couple quick thoughts. Two things that popped in my mind this morning as I prepare not to watch the Republican convention. Good luck to you there, by the way.
Thank you.
Hope you come out okay.
Yeah, I hope I can just even get in. You know, it's going to be a...
Yeah, maybe they'll let you into one of those free speech zones. You'll be
there,
a
you go.
Close seat there. Two thoughts. One thought was, A, I feel like, maybe it will change after the convention here, but I feel like John Kerry has been playing nothing but defense. And I'm just sitting here chopping at the bit, waiting for him to just tear into these guys. It seems to me there's so much ammo and there's so many things you could take him to task on, yet somehow we end up spending 2 weeks John Kerry trying to, you know, defend his Vietnam record.
Yeah, I think there's a larger issue, Steve, than that. And the Wall Street Journal had a really good article today, either on the front page or on one of the front pages, about how the Republicans are playing to their base, whereas Kerry and the Democrats are doing the traditional thing, which is trying to play to the middle and the swing voters. And I believe that the Republicans are doing the right thing politically by playing to their base, and the Democrats should be doing the same, and they're not. And I am as frustrated as you are that John Kerry is not, A, being aggressive, and B, you know, being outspoken about, in a very blunt, honest, straightforward way, about, you know, what he would do, and, you know, playing to his base, as it were, talking to people like you and me. Now, you know, to give him some credit, he's following the election strategy that Franklin Roosevelt followed in 1932, running against Herbert Hoover, and there are a lot of parallels, by the way.
The booming economy.
There you go, yeah, among others. Yeah, and Hoover and Roosevelt just went right down the middle in that election and won. But the real landslide victory that Roosevelt got was in 36, when he was just right stand up about who he was and what he was, and I really think John Kerry should be doing that. Steve, I agree with you. Thanks for the call. Got to take
Keep
a break.
Keep up the good work. Thanks, Tom.
You too. And hey, tag, you're it. Pass it along. You know, pass the good word along. Thanks, Steve. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'll tell you about a club for liars today on Hightower Radio. Excellent news, Americans. A new way to lie. In a nation that's gone from simple childhood fibs of my dog ate my homework to the more nefarious lies of a White House that has sent hundreds of people to die in Iraq on the false claims that Saddam Hussein was about to hit us with weapons of mass destruction, now we have new technology to extend the culture of lying to anyone with a cell phone. Yes, cell phones not only allow you to make calls or even take photographs, but also to join cells of cell phone liars who will help you cheat on your spouse, skip work, or you name it. Take the Alibi and Excuse Club, a network of some 3,400 subscribers, unknown to each other, who are willing to lie for you in exchange for you lying for them when they're in a pinch. Say you want to slip away for a weekend with a lover. What to tell your spouse? No problem. Just send out a message to the Alibi and Excuse group, and you're likely to get a volunteer who will call your spouse, posing as one of your bosses and explaining that you've been dispatched on an emergency sales mission to New York or Paris or Kalamazoo. You pay a fee to join the club, and you're also under some general obligation to return the favor when other members put out the call for a credible lie. Jumping on an entrepreneurial opportunity, others have found ways to add value to the lying phone schemes. For $2.99, for example, you can equip your cell phone to play the sounds of a rasping cough to simulate a lung infection while you're sitting on the beach sipping a cool one. You can also get honking horns and a screaming ambulance to simulate a traffic jam, thus explaining why you can't get home while you're actually chilling at a bar and watching the game. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, there could be glitches, such as if your spouse joins the same Alibi Club and takes your call for help in creating a lie so you can have an affair. Ouch.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 600% greater error rate. Florida counties using touchscreens. Remember in the 2002 election? There were all these reports from people who were saying that they went in and they voted for, I believe it was McBride, who was the guy who was running against Jeb Bush for governor. And they'd push the McBride button and the machine would say, "Thank you for voting for Jeb Bush." And they're going, "What? What? What?" And after enough people complained about this, the voting machine companies came out and said, "Well, we must have misaligned the touch screens." But nobody, you know, there was never any. There's no way to audit it. There's no way to find out. To this day, we don't know how many of those votes were stolen by Jeb Bush. But in the test that they did, according to Greg Palast here, 600% more errors on the touchscreens than on the paper ballots read by optical scanners. First brother Jeb has teamed with Lepore. This is the woman I was just telling you about who's going to count her own vote. To keep the vote clean and white, together they have refused the Democrats' request for a more reliable paper ballots as an option for voters. So you show up and you say, you know, would you like paper or electronic? You can't say that. No, sorry. It's going to be the electronic voting or nothing. That's it, period. Election supervisor in Leon County, election supervisor Ian Sancho, insisted on paper ballots and did not lose a single vote to error in the March presidential primary. Greg Ballas points out, or says, Sancho told me it's a slam dunk certainty that the computer screens will snatch away several thousand Palm Beach votes. Oh, gee, I wonder who that's going to benefit. Who do you think? Rahm and I were talking about this during the break. He says, you know, there's going to be so many screw-ups in so many places. Maybe it's all going to balance out. I think not. I have this creepy, unpleasant, whatever. I'm lacking adjectives. Feeling that some very, very, very bad stuff is going to be happening in this election in November, and that it is not going to be by accident, and that it is being set up right now. And I am very hopeful that Americans do not just sit back and change the channel, but that people start speaking out and responding when this happens. Because I it's going to happen. We've seen it happen in the primaries. We saw it happen in the special election in California. And what was amazing to me is in that special election in California, there were so many areas, so many counties, towns, and things where the computing, the voting machines failed. And by failed, you know, like didn't register the votes the way they were supposed to. So many that the Secretary of State said, we're not using these things anymore. And yet at the time, it was a little 3-inch story on page 6 in the newspaper. You know, what Thomas Paine said, you know, the franchise, the vote, is the power by which all other powers are held by we the people. To take away a man's franchise, to take away a man's vote, is to reduce him to slavery. Thomas Paine said back in the 1780s. Yeah, I forget which publication it was he said it in, but it is so true. And we must be vigilant. We absolutely must be vigilant. Well, the who did what in Vietnam story gets a little more interesting. You ever hear of Ben Barnes? For some reason, I have a feeling this guy is not going to be a guest on every program on Earth like John O'Neill has been. Now that even though John O'Neill now has been demonstrated to be a liar in so many different arenas, he's still out there. But anyhow, Ben Barnes is the former lieutenant governor of Texas. And he was the lieutenant governor of Texas when George W. Bush, suddenly his draft number came up. And within a month or three, he had to report for duty. And his daddy was a congressman. And the official line that George W. has said in campaign gigs, I mean, this started back in 1999, somebody asked him about this. How'd you get into the National Guard when there was a waiting list of several hundred people ahead of you, which would have represented, you know, 6-8 months, maybe a year that you'd have to wait, during which time you would have been drafted? How did you get in there? And Bush says, and I quote, this from 1999 news conference, he says, I can tell you what happened. Nothing happened. My guard unit was looking for pilots, and I flew for the guard. Well, he wasn't a pilot before. In fact, turns out George W. Bush has never soloed. He can't even really claim he's a pilot. But in any case, he says, I have actually soloed. I have a pilot's license. This guy has never soloed. Anyhow, he says, I can tell you what happened. Nothing happened. My guard unit was looking for pilots, and I flew for the guard. I'm proud of my service, and any allegation that my dad asked for special favors is simply not true. I didn't ask anybody to help get me to the guard either. Now, this falls into the same category, in my mind, as his statement about New York. You know, he, for example, here's the clip. As I was...
George Tenet briefed me on a regular basis about... the terrorist threats to the United States of America. And had my administration had any information that terrorists were going to attack New York City on September 11th, we would have acted.
See, notice how very... had we known that terrorists were going to attack New York City on September 11th, we would have acted. Well, on August 6th, he gets this memo. Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. It wasn't the first time he'd been told that, it turns out. In fact, Sandy Berger was telling him, back, you know, when he was first installed as president, to be looking for this stuff. Well, this is the same kind of thing. He says, I didn't ask anybody to help me get to the guard either. Well, it turns out he didn't. Turns out that a guy named Sidney Adger, A-D-G-E-R, Sidney Adger, a Houston oil man, who is a multimillionaire, good buddies with the elder Bush, was the one who... called and said, well, you think you can kind of move this guy up? And then the fellow he called was Roy Barnes. So technically George is telling the truth. It wasn't him. It wasn't his father. It was instead... It was Ben Barnes. It was this Andrew guy, and he called Ben Barnes, former lieutenant governor of Texas, apologized for his role in getting a young George W. Bush into the Texas Air National Guard while young men who were not from prominent or wealthy families died in Vietnam. Ben Barnes just came out and said this just over the weekend. They were doing this. This thing has come out. Apparently, it was filmed some time ago, back on May 27th in Austin, but it's just now, you know, getting some publicity. Here's what Barnes said, and I quote. He said, let's talk a minute about John Kerry and George Bush. I know both of them. I got a young man named George W. Bush into the Texas National Guard when I was lieutenant governor. And I'm not necessarily proud of that, but I did it. I got a lot of other people in the National Guard because I thought that's what people should do when you're in office and you help a lot of rich people. And I walked to the Vietnam Memorial the other day, Barnes continued, and I looked at the names of the people who died in Vietnam, and I became more ashamed of myself than I have ever been, because it was the worst thing I ever did, was help a lot of wealthy supporters and a lot of people who had family names of importance get into the National Guard. And I'm very sorry about that, and I'm very ashamed, and I apologize to you as voters of Texas. And then he goes on to say, this is the guy who got George W. into the Champagne unit. This was a unit that under no circumstances would be sent to Vietnam. The guard back in the 60s was very different than it is today. He says, and I tell you for the record, and I tell you that for the Republicans to jump on John Kerry and say he's not a patriot after he went to Vietnam and was shot at and fought for our freedom and came back here and protested against the war, he's a flip-flopper. Let me tell you, John Kerry is 100 times better a patriot than George Bush or Dick Cheney. End of quote. This from the former lieutenant governor of Texas who got George W. into the National Guard. Remarkable, eh? 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Kevin in Tampa's on the line. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm calling from the Banana Republic.
Yeah.
Listen, I called about what you were talking about, the elections and the supervisors down here in the Banana Republic.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who has been endorsed by Dean is running for the supervisor of the elections tomorrow in Hillsborough, which is Tampa.
Uh-huh.
And he's been endorsed by both major newspapers.
Oh, that's great. Feel free to give him a plug by name right here if you want.
Rob McKenna. Anybody in Hillsborough, Rob McKenna on the Democratic primary.
Okay.
And there were two things I wanted to point out to you. One was... Supervisor of elections used to be nonpartisan. They are partisan elections now.
Well, they still do. There's an R or a D after their name, sort of thing. I mean, they actually.
Yeah, and tomorrow is our state primary.
Right.
And we're only picking the candidates.
for the supervisors of election. And so you
right.
So
now
got,
the Republican has no opposition. He's an appointee by Bush. The previous supervisor of election, who was excellent, there was a zero vote difference in 2000.
Right.
She's now the mayor of Tampa.
Amazing.
So
it's a stepping stone kind of position.
Well, yeah, but she's been a local politician for years. But the thing I really wanted to talk about, wanted to point that out, what was going on tomorrow.
Yeah.
I had sent you, I don't know if you got to see, it was late this morning when I sent it. There was a judge in Tallahassee who made a ruling, I think on Thursday, might have been Friday, that said that no voting machines in Florida can be used if they cannot produce a paper trail because it's in violation of our state constitution.
Oh, really? No, I didn't see that, Kevin. My spam catcher, the last I checked email was around 10:30, so either my spam catcher caught
it. It was after that, I think.
Well, and not only that, oddly, whenever the Patriot Act was passed, just about a month after that, all of a sudden started taking sometimes it takes as much as 12 hours for email to get to me, even if I send it to myself.
Well, anyway, just to tell you about this real fast, a district court, administrative court in Tallahassee, in a suit brought by the ACLU, ruled that you cannot have machines that do not permit recounts because under the Florida Constitution, in certain circumstances, recounts are mandated by the Constitution.
Which is the case in virtually every state in the United States.
Right.
Now, at what level was this judge? Was this an
administrative judge? I'm not sure which court.
Okay, an administrative law judge. Then basically,
right.
I believe that's a county position, isn't it?
Now, this is a statewide ruling.
Uh-huh.
The
okay.
Secretary of, because it was brought for the state.
Yeah.
It was brought into Tallahassee. The Secretary of State, her name is Glenda Hood, has not decided whether to appeal or not. If she appeals, there's a stay on it automatically.
Which will last until the elections, presumably.
Right, but she's not sure. They are considering trying to make the machines compliant.
Yeah.
Now, they have to do this before 7 o'clock tomorrow morning when the polls open. One or the other.
Well, guess what, Kevin? you want to make a bet? I know.
But anyway, I thought you'd like to know about this, and we don't, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but it's back in the courts again.
Yeah.
And the ACLU, they've been down here fighting for 4 years.
Yeah.
Along with other groups.
But they've been fighting largely, the ACLU has been fighting largely for the rights of people who got stripped off the voters list because there were felons with the same name in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
They've been doing
that, but they've been involved in all of it.
In all of it.
Yeah, and they're involved in this one, and this has been a suit going on for a little while, especially since the McBride-Bush election 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that election down on the East Coast somewhere where 137 votes disappeared a couple months ago.
Yeah, by the way, in the McBride-Bush election, do you know off the top of your head what kind of margin Bush won that by?
Somewhere between 5 and 7 points.
Oh, so it was pretty substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that actually, in many ways, was to be expected unless the Democrats really got everybody out to vote. If the Democrats come out to vote, the Republicans can't win in Florida. That's been the problem. It's been the turnout.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we need to. I mean, I think that we should, for example, we should have our elections over the weekends. They should run 2 days.
I've been advocating that for a while. In fact, we probably should have a universal, all across the country, universal opening and closing hours over a 48-hour period.
Yeah, or if we have to stay with Tuesdays because of state or federal elections, then they should be declared national holidays. And anybody can take time off from work.
Hey,
yeah.
I remember as a kid growing up in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
They don't do this anymore. The bars were closed while the polls were open.
Oh, interesting.
And the Democratic, you know, one of those big
cities. So the drunks had to get out and vote.
Well, what they would do is the big city, you know, the big city Democratic machines.
Yeah, yeah,
Philly,
yeah.
New York, Boston, all that.
Sure, yeah.
Well, our ward guys and all, I would remember seeing them. They'd go around to people's homes to get them to vote and bring them a bottle if they'd go vote.
Ah, because the bars were closed. See, it's all, you know, none of this stuff is new. I mean, you know, corruption is nothing that the Republicans have a monopoly on.
Well, that's not corruption.
Yeah.
Give a guy a drink.
yeah. No, it's just...
Well, I guess you could say it is.
What's happened, though, what's alarming, I mean, that's the old-fashioned stuff, you know, the ward system. And, that, and you know, and you know, the Al D'Amato being called, you know, Senator Pothole and stuff like that. but you know, the whole idea that all politics is local, you know, kind of a good thing. But what's happening now is a level of not just corruption, but interference in the actual process of voting.
This is
so toxic to democracy, so destructive. Kevin, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Tom Hartman with you. 10 minutes before the hour. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
This is Vivek Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing states swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere hit a record high last year, but new records are routine when it comes to CO2. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The Mauna Loa volcano in Hawaii rises more than 2 miles above sea level. Near the top is an observatory where scientists have been recording the makeup of the atmosphere since 1958. Last year, the readings of a common greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, reached record high concentrations. A government scientist who monitors this research says the record is part of a routine. He says levels of CO2 get higher every year, and they won't stop until we cut our use of fossil fuels. Peter Tanz is an atmospheric scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which runs the Mauna Loa Observatory. Tanz says that in all the years since 1958, the carbon dioxide measurements at Mauna Loa have never gone down. They've only gotten higher.
CO2 does increase every year. The bad news is that if we really want to stabilize CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere, we've got to stop emitting CO2. To me, tells a story about what we ought to be doing, and that is work as hard as we can on alternative fuels.
Carbon dioxide is one of the dominant greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and the growing concentrations of CO2 contribute to ongoing changes in the Earth's climate. The CO2 readings on Mauna Loa are the longest continuous record of the gas made by direct sampling of the atmosphere. Tan says the Hawaiian volcano is an excellent place to measure greenhouse gases. The elevation of the observatory and the nature of the air currents make it ideal for studying the composition of the Earth's atmosphere and the way it's changing. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. John O'Neill notes, MediaMatters.org, is now known to have lied about himself, his organization, and his book. He's lied about being a Republican from Texas. He's lied about his political involvement. He's lied about his ties to the Nixon White House. He's lied about his campaign contributions. He's lied about his co-author. He's lied about the makeup of Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. And he's lied about whether or not he was ever in Cambodia. And you ask the question, why is anybody paying attention to him? And for that matter, why isn't somebody asking some of the other questions? This was an article in USA Today, but it kind of got buried. At a time when Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry has come under fire, an article by Dave Moniz and Jim Drinkard in USA Today, from a group of retired naval officers who say he lied about his combat record, questions about Bush's stint in the Texas Air National Guard remain unresolved. For example, why did Bush, described by some of his fellow officers as a talented and enthusiastic pilot, stop flying fighter jets in the spring of 1972 and fail to take an annual physical exam required of all pilots? What they don't add is, by the way, that was the year. In fact, that was within a month or two period of when they instituted drug testing as part of the physicals that the pilots were required to take. Number two, what explains the apparent gap in the president's guard service in the 72-73 period when commanders in Texas and Alabama say they never saw him report for duty and records show no pay to Bush when he was supposed to be on duty in Alabama? This goes beyond just, fail to miss a meeting. In fact, it goes beyond AWOL, absent without leave. AWOL is only up to 30 days. If you're AWOL for more than 30 days, you're considered a deserter. And if you're a deserter during time of war, that's a whole other category. And from all the available records that we can find, we have right now a man sitting in the White House who was a deserter during time of war. And he has had the audacity to send the sons and daughters of other people off to their deaths and to lie to you and me and the world about why he did it. Did he receive preferential treatment? Of course, now we know he did. In fact, we even know who gave it to him. It was the Lieutenant Governor of Texas at the time. A lot of real substantial questions, shall we say, that I think the Bush administration, I think George Bush should be held accountable for, particularly when he's got his surrogates, his good buddies in Texas, slandering John Kerry with what are clearly lies. I mean, the question that is so much in my mind, why would all the guys who are on the boat with John Kerry lie on his behalf? All of them. And everybody else is telling the truth? Come on.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't
Okay, ma'am, I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those mad Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
From the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet, democracy is coming to the USA.
In the news, Donnie Trump, the trumped-up corporate personality who poses as a hard-headed business guru on a television reality show, is steadily sinking into an entirely different reality of his own making. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts, Inc., Donnie's real-life corporate empire, has lost $66 million in the first half of this year, double what it lost last year. This is on top of the heavy burden of a $1.8 billion debt that is squeezing the financial life out of the company. Thanks to Trump's managerial incompetence, his business has never managed to make a profit in its decade of existence, and it's now teetering on the precipice of bankruptcy. His performance is so wretched that he's being pushed by his investors to step aside as CEO. Yet, there's the Donald, still posturing as a savvy corporate boss on his TV show. This guy has an ego bigger and more gaseous than Neptune, and the fact that he's a managerial wreck waiting to happen won't deter him from strutting around like a cock of the corporate roost. Indeed, rather than tending to his business woes, he's now launching a new magazine to market himself as a business whiz. Modestly titled Trump World, the magazine will focus on, quote, his personal interests, all of which can be summed up in one word, himself. The PR push for this bi-monthly mag says that the Donald will dish out his, quote, business and real estate advice, as well as offering helpful tips on such mundane matters as how to hire a butler, what to look for when buying an island, and where to stay while in Bora Bora. Incredibly, when he was asked why his own mug was not on the cover of the first issue, Trump airily declared, "I'd like to keep a very low profile." This is Jim Hightower saying, oh, sure, a guy who has a new magazine to hype his Donaldness 24/7 really doesn't want to be part of the celebrity chase.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention. Be sure to tune in. Should be entertaining. What should we do about Social Security? Do we need to do anything about Social Security? Well, there are different viewpoints. Mr. Greenspan has certainly weighed in on the issue recently. He just in today's Wall Street Journal, a big article about it, and there are more. You know, Greenspan, Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan said Friday the country will face abrupt and painful choices unless Congress acts quickly to trim Social Security and Medicare benefits for the baby boom generation. And in fact, there's a particular irony. He said they want to raise the retirement age from 65 to 67. It's already scheduled. He suggested that the retirement age be continually adjusted. In other words, forever, every year, raise it. Maybe when you get to be 100, and then you can retire. And trimming the annual cost of living adjustment. So as inflation goes up, the amount of money you get goes down. Give me a break, Mr. Greenspan. Well, into this fray, or some would say in part because of this, the Ayn Rand Institute and others who share I don't want to say the objectivist point of view, but the what would you call that, Andrew Bernstein? Dr. Andrew Bernstein is with us. He's an adjunct professor of philosophy at Pace University at the State University of New York at Purchase, and author of three Ayn Rand titles for Cliff Notes, and is a visiting fellow with Ayn Rand. What's your title with the AynRand.org folks?
Senior writer and fellow at the Ayn Rand Institute, Tom.
Great. Thank you. Andrew Bernstein, always good to have you with us.
Oh, always good to be here, Tom.
Thank you. I'm assuming that you would say that And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I just toss this out, and you can tell, you correct me if I'm wrong. That
okay.
You would say that Social Security is socialism.
Well, it's a socialist policy. It's a welfare state policy insofar as young people are basically taxed to finance the benefits for retired people. So it's a form of wealth redistribution.
Right, and it doesn't just cover retired people. It covers as well people who have been so badly injured or sustained, you know, everything from birth defects to injuries, from Down syndrome to they can't work, right? Those people are
right.
Also eligible for Social Security. So your solution to this is to tell them, tough luck, get a job, right?
For people with Down syndrome, I think in a capitalist society, I think they'd be taken care of either by their families or by private charity. But regarding Social Security, I think the morally and practically best thing to do is privatize it. And I think the moral point is that you could enhance people's freedom by allowing them to retain their hard-earned money rather than having the government seize it. And I think the practical point is people can invest their money then in private retirement accounts and do far better than they can on the Social Security.
Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office right now, the cost associated with managing 144 million accounts, which is roughly what's going on with Social Security right now, would be 20 times... That's 2,000%, 20 times? You're probably a better mathematician than I am.
I'm not the math guy. I'm just a philosopher.
You know, I think 2 times would be 200 times, so 20 times would be 2,000% higher. If the program was privatized than it is now, because rather than having basically one central agency administering the program, you would have dozens or hundreds of agencies administering the program, each one taking their little piece of the action. I mean, this is really just a giant honeypot for Wall Street, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm only a philosopher. But I would still, even so, just in common sense, I would question such a claim. I think a bureaucracy, especially a governmental bureaucracy, is notoriously inefficient. And if you're dealing with private brokers, if you're dealing with Merrill Lynch or Bear Stearns or people like that, I think those companies are far more efficient than the government is. I think, in my judgment, what I know about economics, the maintenance of such accounts would be less expensive in a capitalist society than under the government.
So the government's always inefficient. If your house is on fire, why not call a private fire company if the government's so inefficient?
Well, I don't think there's any problem with having private fire departments. I think that could very well be left to private industry. I think private enterprise has demonstrated that it's vastly more efficient than the government in general, which is why the capitalist countries in general are far wealthier than the socialist ones.
So, and I'm assuming then that you're familiar with back in the early 19th century when we actually, in many major cities in the United States, had private fire companies, and you had to pay an annual fee to them, a membership fee, so of course they could cover their costs and make a profit. You get a medallion from them. You put it on the front of their house. If somebody reported a fire, they would come by, and if it wasn't their fire company, they would just keep going, keep right on going. And a lot of people died as a result of that. Isn't there a point at which we as a society say to ourselves, you know, we're willing collectively to take responsibility for us?
I think the rational point is that we're willing individually to take responsibility. I think part of the problem in American society as it moves away from individualism and capitalism is that if more and more responsibility is handed to the government to take care of us, that means less and less responsibility on each one of us. I think we've seen a great breakdown of individual and personal responsibility in this country.
But first of all, we're not individuals. We're a society. We're social animals. We don't all just live separately individual lives. We live in the context of families. Our families live in the context of communities. Our communities live in the context of larger communities, you know, counties, wards, states, and ultimately a nation. Are you suggesting that all of that is just irrelevant, that we should just, you know, every man for himself?
No, I think, you know, I absolutely agree that human beings flourish in society much better than if they lived alone on a desert island. But I do think that a government is a great boon to individuals' life if it recognizes that they have individual rights and respects those rights. If we drift into dictatorship, for instance, living under Hitler or under Stalin or something like that, you're much better off alone on a desert island than living in that kind of society.
Well, I don't think anybody's suggesting that. Come on.
No, but I think governments and society in general are a great boon to us as long as they respect and recognize and protect our right to our own life. And regarding Social Security, I think the question here that I think we should all ask regarding the paternalistic state is, who knows better what's right for me or the government? And I think if you put the question to the American people in that form, I think a lot of them are going to respond, I know better what's right for me than the government does.
But, well, you know, I would agree with you if the government was, say, for example, the government of the Soviet Union, if it was an unelected government, if the government was Fidel Castro, if the government had somehow been turned over to a bunch of private corporations that didn't have to respond to we the people. But here in the United States, the government is, at least in theory, and hopefully one day again, us. It's us. So really the question is not who knows better for me, some entity over there or me, but who knows better for us or some third party like a king or a theocratic pope or a group of rich people, feudalism. Really, doesn't it really boil down to that?
No, but the government, I mean, regarding Social Security, the government is taking my money. Here's a minor suggestion.
Can't we agree for just a moment, first of all, though, that taxes are the price of admission to a civil society?
No, I don't agree with that. I don't think the government needs to be financed by taxes. I think it could be financed voluntarily, and I think government spending should be cut dramatically first. But here's an initial suggestion regarding Social Security, and that is, I can make an analogy to the abortion issue. I mean, just as about choice, just as a pregnant woman properly has the choice regarding her own body between motherhood and abortion, I think so a working individual has the choice regarding his own money between spending it to improve his life now and saving it for his retirement. And I think the government needs to recognize that we have inalienable rights, and we have the right to our own body, we have the right to our own effort, we have the right to our own money.
This is apples and oranges.
The government should respect my right to my money, and as a responsible person, I'll spend some of it now to improve my life in the present, and I'll put some away for my retirement.
Yeah, come on, Dr. Bernstein, that's apples and oranges. This is, and we're not going to get into an argument of parsing abortion here, and or change the subject. A few minutes ago, you were talking about individualism.
About choice. That's my point.
You were talking about individualism and capitalism. And you seem to think that capitalism is an aspect of individualism. Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
And yet, capitalism only functions, or largely functions, when groups of people get together and invest their capital to create an entity which represents them collectively called a corporation. Is that not the case?
Yes, that's true.
Then how is that individualism?
But individualism doesn't mean that people don't voluntarily cooperate. Individualism simply means that individuals have inalienable rights, the rights by virtue of being human beings that society has to respect. That's all individualism.
So then how?
It means I have the right to guide my own life by my own independent judgment, so long as I'm not a criminal, so long as I do not initiate.
Yeah. So broadly, what you're suggesting is that capitalism, if a bunch of wealthy people get together and create a corporation, or even not wealthy people, a bunch of people have the resources, the means to get together and create a corporation, that is somehow individualism. That is a reflection of the value and the goodness of individualism. And
okay,
yet, if a group of people get together and say collectively, we're going to create a government, we'll call it the town of Montpelier, Vermont, and we're going to have a fire department and a police department, and we're going to collectively, by the will of the majority, while respecting the rights of the minorities, a republic, that somehow is not individualism. I'm confused.
No, I don't take that ladder. Agree with that latter point. I think we need a
government. But you just said government is a them, and it's anti-free initiative, and corporations are expressions of individualism.
I'm saying that the government has to respect my rights. They can't steal my money. A private corporation, if they stole my money, they're criminals, and properly so. They should go to jail. But the government steals my money, they're somehow magnanimous. They're paternalistic. They're taking care of me in my old age, and that's considered morally right.
If we collectively agree that we want to do this, what's wrong with us collectively agreeing?
Yeah, but I don't agree.
Okay.
And why should the majority be granted the power to impose their will on me?
Because it's called democracy.
Well, I don't believe in democracy.
Okay.
I believe
okay.
in the Constitution. I don't believe in unlimited majority rule. I believe in the constitutional republic with a Bill of Rights protecting the inalienable rights of individuals from the majority.
Well, see, there are two things there. One is that the majority defines the agenda, and at the same time, the rights of the minority are protected. That I think is a functional definition of.
Well, I think in some sense that's true, but I think the way that the majority defines the agenda or their policies has to take place within a framework of individual rights, so that you know we can elect.
I agree.
Republican candidate or a Democratic candidate, they have different foreign policies, et cetera, but I think it should all be done within the context where the rights of the individual are recognized and protected, so that the different policies of different politicians will be different but delimited within a moral context.
I absolutely agree with you, and that's what our Constitution does, but I don't see what that has to do with Social Security. Let's continue with this right after this break.
Okay.
By the way, we've got a couple of folks on hold. Do you mind taking a couple of calls?
No, sure.
Okay, great. Stick around. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org, for more information. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein of the Ayn Rand Foundation, AYNRAND.org. Let's take a couple calls here. We've only got Dr. Bernstein has to leave at the bottom of the hour, unfortunately. And so let's try and make our calls quick because we've only got, I think, about 4.5 minutes here. Mike in Orlando, Florida is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Dr. Bernstein, you've been on a number of times and
yes,
always argue against programs such as Social Security to help the people. Yet I've never heard you complain about programs that help corporations, such as taking money out of my hard-earned money and giving it to companies that benefit from war, and these companies that have close ties to those in the administration that make the decisions.
Corporate welfare as well, in other words.
Well, 2 points. First of all, I don't think that Social Security helps the people. I think, as I said before, I think we'd all be much better off morally and practically if we had access to our own money and wasn't robbed. But I'm opposed to corporate welfare, if that's what you're talking about. I don't think the government should take your money or anybody else's to bail out some corporation in trouble. I think corporations should have to compete on an open market, and the customers decide who wins. And
Dr. Bernstein, aren't you also, though, in favor of there being no constraints on corporate behavior, which would prevent corporations from getting so large and so powerful that they could essentially buy off or bully or threaten politicians as we have today, so that politicians like George Bush and Bill Frist are passing legislation, for example, that with Medicare hands $200 billion just to the pharmaceutical companies of our tax dollars.
I believe in laissez-faire, Tom. I think the government should be legally restricted from activity on the marketplace. I believe
but not corporations.
Of state and marketplace, just like state insurance. In that case, the corporations couldn't buy political favors because the politicians would be legally restricted from selling them.
Excuse me, but if you were given information that you thought was to be honest and forthright from companies such as Enron and were basing all your life savings on that, and they're being lied to you, so you have nothing to fall back on but based on the fact that you believed in somebody. I mean,
absolutely.
The corporations aren't honest.
And I'm not opposed to
the
criminal
line.
Justice system. I think we need a criminal justice system, and I think fraud is a crime. And if those people at Enron are guilty of fraud, as I believe they probably are, then I think they should go to
jail. Yeah, but where does that leave the people that have invested in it? They haven't got
their
money back, no matter how much they've been defrauded.
Paid back as reparations to the people they robbed.
So you've got...
The criminals got charged, but they haven't got their money back.
Right. Here's the point that Mike is making, Dr. Bernstein. You got a bunch of people who invested their savings in Enron doing exactly what you suggested. They said, screw Social Security. I'm going to put my money in an individual account. They put it in Enron. They lose everything. The guys from Enron, in your world, you say, okay, put them in jail. They go to jail. But these people are left with no money. You say we as a society shouldn't say, hey, okay, we'll kick in with Social Security and help them out?
Social Security means you're ripping off the taxpayers.
In other words,
if you put your money in a private investment account, it's possible that the market may go down. You might lose your money.
It's possible that money might be stolen.
That's certainly possible. But in the long run, and in principle, you do far better in private investments than you do with Social Security. Furthermore, we talk about corruption.
Yeah, but Social Security is not an investment program.
It's far more fraudulent than the money they steal and waste and blow than any private corporation ever has been.
Well, first of all, I strongly disagree. Mike, thanks for the comments. Well said. We got to move along. Here's Tom in Western New York on the topic. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Good show. First of all...
We've only got about a minute left, by the way.
Okay. Privatization is a misnomer. You know, taking our tax dollars and giving to corporations instead of government employees isn't privatization. It's corporatizing government. You know, under... That definition of privatization, Medicare is already privatized because that's all we're doing is giving our tax money to doctors and hospitals and stuff.
Your response, Dr. Bernstein?
Well, again, I mean, I don't stand for the current mixed economy. What I believe in is a laissez-faire system, and under laissez-faire, the government is not able to buy or sell political favors. They're not able to sell economic favors to companies. Ultimately, the companies compete on a free market, and you and I, as customers, decide who wins, and that's the
isn't that the world of Scrooge and Marley? Isn't that the world of Scrooge and Bob Cratchit, you know, where you've got a few wealthy people and a whole lot of terrified workers that you're advocating?
Well, it's a fictitious world. If you look at the actual history of capitalism in 19th century Britain, real wages were rising dramatically throughout.
Look at our own history.
Based on the great industrial production.
We had 40% of people living in poverty.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Tom, and I'm sorry we're out of time here. Tom, good point you made. Dr. Bernstein, thank you again for being on the program with us. I do appreciate it.
Anytime, Tom. So
okay. Fun. We'll have you on again. We're 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll continue with this discussion of Social Security. If you want to call in, 1-866-889-8894. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in? Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we? In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places. Money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's 1:30, more or less. 1:30 Eastern time. Well, let's see, it's the bottom of the second hour of our program. Time for our regular call from the Talk Radio News Service today, Ellen Ratner, and apparently with Alex Marks of the Christian Science Monitor there with you, Ellen?
She is. We're on one line, so we have to kind of switch back and forth.
Okay. You know, we just did an hour or a half hour with a guy from the Ayn Rand Institute basically supporting Alan Greenspan coming out in for the abolition of Social Security. Is there a buzz about that in Washington, D.C. before we get to the...
I'm at the Republican convention, so... Yeah. I'm sure they would support that. I don't think that's quite what Alan Greenspan said.
No, it wasn't.
He said that we cannot give retirement and just continue to give it willy-nilly and not take a look at what the implications are. Now, it has to do with nobody wants to say those words, but means testing is clearly what's coming up around the issue of Social Security.
Well, it could be one. I mean, today I went onto the Social Security website and looked at the numbers, and it looks like, they're generating a trillion-dollar surplus right now. They've got a $1.5 trillion surplus that's invested in treasuries, not to mention the fact that Bush is spending the surplus, other of the surplus. But they're solvent for 35 years, and the tax only hits you on the first $89,000 you earn. What if they simply eliminated that ceiling so that even millionaires and billionaires paid into the Social Security fund, it would be solvent forever.
That's very true. And now that you applied for credentials through us, I know that you and I are the same age.
Yeah.
Born in 51.
Yep.
And so I think what they're thinking about is, you know, as you and I get to that 66, 67 years old, and also think about Medicare with the kind of drugs and expenses, et cetera, that they're saying that's going to be too much. But you and I know you can raise money in a lot of other ways.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's an entirely regressive thing to say we're only going to pay for Social Security with the first $87,000 to $89,000 of people's income. In other words, only the middle class and working people are going to pay into Social Security, and yet Donald Trump is eligible for it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And that's right. Self-employed people who don't really draw a salary, but who own a company and, you know, get things.
Or people like the Walton family who make their living sitting around on their butts by the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive. They're not paying into it. But that's a whole other thing. What's happening there in New York, Ellen?
Well, there was a huge protest yesterday. I'm going to actually put Alexandra Marks on the phone with you now on that issue. Republicans are very much trying to control the message on Radio Row. They're flipping out that there are some Democrats walking around there. They're not happy campers.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there tonight.
Hello.
Hello, Alex?
Yeah.
Hey, Alex, what's going on there? This is Tom Hartman. You're live on the air, coast to coast here.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we are sitting here at an outside cafe on Broadway enjoying an absolutely spectacular New York day. We wish you all could join us.
Well, I will tomorrow. I'll be there tomorrow. I'll be there tonight. Tell us about the demonstration. Ellen started, kind of teased us with it. What's going on?
Well, I think the most stunning thing about the demonstration was that it was so orderly. Right up to the last minute, there were court challenges. The protesters wanted to be in Central Park. The city didn't want them trampling the grass. But there was this general sense of goodwill on the part of the protesters and police. And I think, it was half a million people, 500,000 people, which is probably the biggest protest New York has seen in decades. But it was hot too. It was really hot and kind of low key. But so I guess what was amazing about it is kudos to the police for, you know, keeping cool heads, and kudos to the protesters. I think we had maybe 250 arrests. Not a lot.
Yeah, that's insignificant. That's the average arrest rate in any given half hour in New York City, even without protesters. Right?
No. But this is the safest big city in the country. Don't you know that?
I don't disagree. I've spent a lot of my life in New York City, and that's a whole other story. But in any case, I have great affection for New York City. I'm looking forward to being there tonight. Yes. So
look forward to seeing you.
Yeah. So what do you see coming up over the next few days, both in the inside the hall and outside?
There's going to be spontaneous protests throughout the week. I think there's maybe 100 or 90 that are permitted still to go. So it's just going to be a steady, but none as big as yesterday's. Yeah. So there'll be like a steady drumbeat of anti-Bush sentiment on the streets in the city. But at the same time, I think from the convention, you know, you're going to just see a very orderly, what the Bush administration wants to do is make people comfortable with him and make people comfortable with his policies. And so, you know, as has been said many times, they're putting on a, you know, a very moderate face. They're putting the, you know, the, even though he is, anti-abortion, they're putting a lot of the sort of the pro-choice Republicans up in prime time. And so basically, just like the Democrats tried to reach out to middle America, because there's a very slim, a sliver of votes that are swayable right now, and they want to reach out. The Democrats wanted to reach out to them, and that's exactly what the Republicans will be doing too.
Yeah, and Bush was actually, you know, in 2000, I have to put the caveat on here that Al Gore won more votes than any presidential candidate in the history of the United States, 500,000
right.
more than George
right.
W. Bush.
539,000 more than George
That's,
Bush, that, I
yeah,
think it was.
Yeah, thereabouts. More than 500,000 in any case. But even with that caveat, that George W. Bush did a really remarkable little bit of sleight of hand in the final 7 or 8 months of the 2000 election cycle. Between the primaries and the general election. In the primaries, he was slugging it out with John McCain and others, and particularly Steve Forbes, competing to see who could be the more hard right. And then as soon as that was over, and he had smeared McCain, you know, with these scurrilous charges and implying that he'd gone nuts in Vietnam and, you know, blah de blah. As soon as that was finished, he reinvented himself as a compassionate conservative, largely in the last month and a half or 2 months of the campaign, and so many Americans actually bought it. Do you think they're going to buy it this time?
Well, I want to say two things. One is I think you see the same kind of tactics that were employed before, like 4 years ago. You know,
yeah.
Laura Bush on one of the morning network shows sort of indicated that she was a little, you know, that she was not hardcore anti-abortion, and they were sending signals that they, you know, that they were more moderate than they had been, you know. And again, with Dick Cheney this week coming out and saying, look, my daughter's gay and I'm not in favor of this ban. So you're seeing sort of similar sort of side messages coming out
yeah.
from the administration.
Very well timed at that, I might add.
And I think the question is, you know, how, you know, I think Americans tend to ultimately, you know, truth resonates. And I think that, you know, there's, even though he might try to have, it's not going to be like the rainbow coalition convention like it was 4 years ago. I think Americans, they've got 4 years of a record now to look at.
Yeah.
And for that small sliver of swing voters, if they've been paying attention, you know, I think that they will, you know, that they will not look at the surface of this week, but they will look at the policies of the last few years. And the other thing is, too, you know, it's the economy.
Yep. You there, Alex? We were talking with Alex Marks of the Christian Science Monitor and Talk Radio News Service, and it sounds like we just lost her. So I'm gonna just drop this line, and they can call back. Alex and Ellen Ratner can call back if that works. They're there in New York City. Hopefully it was just a cell phone failure. Hopefully it wasn't 300 New York City police with clubs. No, I'd say. That's not happening. Let's take a look at the Republicans' platform. I think this is really interesting, the stuff that has come out of the platform. And, here we go. Whoops, Rama got them first. Rama, put them on hold so I can punch the button and I'll drop them in. Yep. Come on, Rama. There we go. Okay. Hello.
Hey.
Hey,
sorry,
Alex.
Sorry about that. I have no idea. The phone made a noise and you were gone.
Yeah, it's you know, just you say, hi, John Ashcroft, and then... Anyhow, as you were saying, Alex.
I'm not sure when you lost me.
Yeah,
you
were talking about the move to the middle, and actually
right.
you were saying something that I'm fairly skeptical about, which is that Americans by and large are able to see through this, or they're actually paying attention and they're discerning.
Do you really
have that much faith in America? I mean, I think the readers of your newspaper that's probably true of. But and I don't mean that gratuitously. I have a lot of respect for the Christian Science Monitor, but the broad swath of Middle America who really, I mean, you've got two worker families. People don't barely have time to watch the evening news, and that's about it. The reading of the morning newspaper is a luxury that's long gone now. People are grabbing their food at fast food restaurants and eating in the car on the way to work. It's not that people are stupid. It just seems to me they don't have time.
No, I absolutely agree with you that they don't have time. But you know what? I think the swing voters, because there are so few of them, are much more tuned in this time.
Now, really, I have to ask the other question, Alex. How could anybody, given how clear the differences are between these two candidates and between these two parties, and how very, very specific, I mean, how obvious it is what this administration has done and what the Democrats are proposing and what they've done, how could anybody in their right mind or anybody of any intellect still be a swing voter?
Well, you know what? I think I was talking to Ellen earlier today, and Iraq and terrorism have it's a question of, as a swing voter. All right, first we got Mayor Koch here, you know, old time Democrat who often like switches over and becomes Republican. He is supporting George Bush completely. He says, I disagree with Bush on every single domestic issue. Bush has not been good for the economy. You know, Bush is wrong about gay marriage. Bush is wrong about, you know, abortion. But he said, in terms of national security, he is like 100% behind Bush.
Because Bush got a memo on August 6th that said Bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S., so he goes on the longest vacation in the history of the American presidency.
Yeah. Well, I stay neutral in my role as a journalist. But what I'm trying to say is, that's a very good point. And but what it's the question of which candidate. I think, you know, on this issue of terrorism and the war on terror, you know, I think what Kerry still has to do is convince people that he is indeed, you know, he will be a strong commander in chief and he will take this on. I think what the damage that was done by the Swift Vote ad is pretty considerable on this issue because it undermines him completely. And I think the Kerry camp really has to come back swinging now. And I mean, I know they're taking a break for this, you know, for the week during the convention, but you know, that I think for these swing voters that it's an issue of, you know, of national security. They're looking beyond their pocketbook.
Now, in today's and I know you have to go in just a second, but I'll make this the last question. In today's Wall Street Journal, there's a huge article. Perhaps you saw it, about how the Republicans have decided, by and large, you know, they're going to pander to the middle somewhat during the convention. But by and large, their campaign strategy is forget about the middle. We're going to our base. If we can get our base out, we're going to win. And the Democrats. The times, if you look back at the times that the Democrats have actually done that, 64 with Lyndon Johnson, 1936 with Franklin Roosevelt, they won by overwhelming majorities.
Yeah.
And yet every other time that the Democrats have tried to go to the middle, they've won by the very slimmest of majorities, or they've lost. Why do you think that the Democrats are trying so hard to play to the middle, and the Republicans are saying, hey, you know, we can look at 100 years of history and figure out that it's the base that counts?
Well, I think there's two campaigns going on the Democratic side. You've got the MoveOn.org and the ACT. You've got the 527s that are really going out, and they're ginning up the base.
Right.
They are really trying to, and I've never seen, I don't know if it's fair to say, but I think the number of get out the vote efforts, particularly aimed at minorities and young people, is one campaign, but Kerry and the presidential campaign has a second one where they really have to. They are speaking to the undivided, you know, the undecided.
Yeah.
They are really making an effort to reach out to those guys who, you know, they're not quite sure about Bush on domestic issues, but they kind of like this whole, you know, sense of what he's done on national security. They're the people that Kerry is reaching out for. But I have to tell you two things, and I should have done this disclosure in the beginning 10 years ago, a long time ago. I worked for John Kerry. I was his press secretary.
Okay.
And one thing that is evident is that
good on you, by the way.
Harvey?
Good on you. I think that's great.
Well, but one thing that's evident, he does better when he's an underdog. He does better when he's 5 points behind. And I think if you look at his 96 race against Wells, who was a very popular governor at the time who decided he wanted to run for Senate, you know, you'll see there was a very strong grassroots organizing effort at the same time, you know, this sort of what appeared to be politics as usual, you know, in terms of Kerry going out. The other thing is the debate. You know, Kerry is quite a skilled debater, and so we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I do think that the Democrats are working to get out the base in a slightly different way than the Republicans.
Yeah, interesting. Alex, thanks so much. Thanks for, so much for the calls. You know, give our best to Ellen and thank her for putting you on the line here with us. And
it's my pleasure.
Keep up the great work.
Speak to her again.
Pardon?
Would you like to speak to her again?
No, you can just tell her goodbye. We've run out of time for this segment, so I appreciate
it.
Tell
her
I'll see you all tomorrow. Have a good one. Thank you very much. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. We just have a minute or so here before we've got to take a break, but I just wanted to look at a couple of the points in the Republican platform. Here's one. Strengthen and enhance Social Security. Now, is anybody taking this seriously? And increase private investment options. So here it comes. Remarkable. I want to share a couple other things here from the Republican campaign platform with you. We'll do that right after this break. It's a fascinating, fascinating document. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartmann here with you. Exposing the con in conservative, where tomorrow we'll be at the convention.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartmann Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. We're going to catch the folks at WTKG AM 1230 Grand Rapids doing something right on September 17th when I'll be live with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 o'clock. It's at the corner of Knapp and the East Beltline. Drop by early for coffee, donuts, and a chat, and then you can listen to the show. At 4 p.m. right after the show, I'll be heading over to the Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-242-6599.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A magnetic compass is the oldest and sometimes most important piece of navigational equipment on board most ships. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Alan Gurney begins his new book, Compass, with the story of a brand new yacht on its maiden voyage in 1998. The luxurious boat bristled with computerized navigational equipment, but Gurney says the electronic systems went dead the first night at sea, and there was no magnetic compass on board.
So there they were, stuck on this high-tech yacht with this great array of screens and batteries and keyboards, all like a James Bond movie. And they didn't know where the hell they were sailing.
Gurney, a former yacht designer himself, says the boat eventually made it back to port. But he says the wayward yacht's experience underscores our continued dependence on this simple device. Gurney traces the history of the compass from its first documented use in the year 1187. He says the device was so valued that sailors in the 1500s had a hand pinned to the mast with a dagger if they were caught messing with it, usually a magnetized needle in a bowl of water. Gurney says as vital as the compass was, it had its limits. The Earth's magnetic poles do not lie directly under its geographic poles, a phenomenon known as magnetic variation.
The needle points north, but it's not to true north, of course. It's to magnetic north. And it took centuries before people realized that magnetic north changes. And also, if you're sailing up in high latitudes in the Arctic and you're getting closer to the north magnetic pole, the pull of the magnetic field tends to make the needle very skittish.
The problem of magnetic variation was solved in the 18th century with the help of the astronomer Edmund Halley. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nazi Tiananmen.
And welcome back. A few more things in the Republican platform. Extend tax deductions to the insurance premiums associated with health savings accounts. Now, the first part of this is the assumption that people are going to have health savings accounts. Just consider this for a moment. This may make perfect sense if you were George W. Bush and you've got a trust fund worth, you know, tens of millions of dollars and a family fortune worth hundreds of millions. It may make perfect sense if you were Ken Lay. It may make perfect sense if you're Dick Cheney, who made $30 million his last year with Halliburton. Who's got, you know, tens of millions of dollars in stock options and still getting up to $1 million a year from Halliburton. It may make perfect sense to set aside $1 million or $2 million or $3 million in a health savings account so that if, God forbid, you were to get a person, let's say, I don't even like to use the word you there, if a person were to get cancer, some really serious, life-threatening, very expensive to treat disease. And a typical cancer treatment in the United States, a cancer diagnosis is worth about $250,000 to the medical industry, and of course it varies. I mean, it can cost millions, or it can cost less than that, depending on how, you know, what kind it is. But nonetheless, I suppose for some folks, setting aside $1 million so that they could have a health savings account, so that if they got sick, they could cover their own medical expenses. And being able to deduct that from their taxes, and then perhaps even in their retirement, being able to use that tax deductible money, that money that was not subject to taxation, to pay for retirement or for old age home, which would be considered medical care. I guess it would make sense to people who were millionaires, multimillionaires, and billionaires. So I suppose it does make sense being here in the Republican platform. But for somebody in the middle class, somebody who is has a hard time saving 1 or 2 or 3% of their income, who, if they're really, really, really willing to, you know, not go see any movies and not go out to the restaurants, and they can set aside $500, $1,000, $2,000 a year. And so, you know, at the end of 10, 15 years of this, they may have $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, maybe $100,000, maybe even $200,000 stored away. And then they get hit with $1 million insurance. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. This is why we have had insurance for hundreds of years. I mean, this, and it's just more of the general madness and class warfare of the Republican Party, right there in the platform, and on it goes. By the way. Let's extend the tax cuts so that our kids will have to pay even more of it and we'll have to pay even less. Mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Time for a change. Time for a change. This November, be sure to vote.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
It's coming through a hole in the air. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the fields that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
From the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA. Say it all.
The big money corruption of American politics will be on display at the national conventions of the Republican and Democratic parties this summer. But you can't see it without a ticket. A very pricey ticket. While both parties will portray themselves as heroic leaders for us common folk, and while the media establishment and its pundits will stay focused on their predictable speeches, politicking, and pageantry inside the hall, the real story will be taking place at high-dollar, invitation-only events inside exclusive clubs, restaurants, and other hideaways of the elite. It's in these places, behind the velvet ropes that screen out all of us common folk, that you can see political and money power ooze, schmooze, and merge into one. For example, maybe you've wondered why the banking laws of our great democracy are written in such a way that allow bankers to rob you and me. Such daylight robberies as their endless and always rising fees, so-called privacy provisions that let them sell our personal financial information, etc., etc. It will all come clear to you if you go to the Swank Rainbow Room in Manhattan on the night of August 30th, the opening day of the Republican National Convention. There you'll see Representative Michael Oxley, chairman of the Financial Services Committee that supposedly oversees the banking industry. He'll be the guest of honor at a party paid for by J.P. Morgan Chase, Credit Suisse First Boston, and the other big banks that profit enormously from Chairman Oxley's willingness to legalize their robbery, banks that currently have bills before him to allow even more robbery. The banks are paying up to $100,000 each in tribute to the guy who writes the banking laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, why won't even one network break away from the convention hall to cover this telling political event? Like at the Academy Awards, they could call out the names of the politicians and banking moguls as they pull up at the Rainbow Room in their limousines. Now that would be good TV.
CNN is at the Republican Convention right now.
We have a ringside seat.
Live from New York's Madison Square Garden.
We're getting inundated with the confetti now.
Trust CNN for the convention's big stories.
There's a lot of buzz today.
And big speeches as they happen.
Electrified this convention.
Don't miss the Republican National Convention.
I proudly accept your nomination.
A live primetime event tonight, 7 Eastern on CNN, America's convention headquarters.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Great to have you with us. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. Today, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont. Last week, of course, we were broadcasting from Santa Fe. Amazing, we sold out the theater we were in. In fact, sold it out 2 weeks before I showed up. It's not by way of bragging here or anything, but it is so gratifying to see so many people all across the country who are interested in becoming politically active, who are waking up to the toxic behavior of this administration, and who want to participate, who want to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. Along those lines, on Wednesday, day after tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, I'll be doing this show, broadcasting this show live, God willing, from the Republican National Convention, and Rahm Schneider will be here running the board and the technical end and spinning all the plates in the air. And should we have any problems, or should Tom DeLay decide that he doesn't want me there, then Rama will fill in. But on Wednesday night, For those of you who are listening in New York, on Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m., there's going to be a screening of a new movie, another one of these documentaries, you know, sort of like unprecedented and uncovered and unprecedented, by the way. The new DVD is out. It's the movie about the theft of the 2000 election in Florida, and you will find me in that movie. I'm in this movie. This Land Is Your Land is the name of it, and the grand opening is going to be at the Festival of Arts Issues and Ideas, the Imagine Festival of Arts Issues and Ideas at the Florence Gould Hall, 59th Street. Tickets are $10, and that's going to be Wednesday night. And I'll be there with Granny D, with Naomi Klein, who wrote No Logo, with Tom Frank, the guy who What's the Matter with Kansas, Mark Caskey, who filed a lawsuit against Nike, which went to the Supreme Court over whether or not corporations have the right to lie, Jim Hightower, and a few other folks. So if you're in New York and you'd like to drop by, that'll be Wednesday night. And the phone number for the box office, and I'll say this once, if you need to get it again, you just call our toll-free number, and Rama here can give it to you. But is 212, of course, New York, 355-6160. So that's what we'll be doing Wednesday night. It's going to be a busy week, flying out this afternoon as the thunderstorms begin to accumulate. Yeah, I'm not one of those people who enjoys flying through thunderstorms. I just have to tell you right up front. But anyway, we'll do it. We'll do it. And we'll get down there. So we were talking about the Republican platform. Excuse me, the things that the Republicans say, well, this is what we stand for. This is what we're going to do. This is what the next 4 years are going to be all about. By the way, our telephone number, 1-866, that's one of those new toll-free, newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call into the program. Back to the Republican platform. Prevent taxes on families from rising. Make the tax relief. Don't you love it when they just spin words like this? We're going to cut taxes on people and borrow money from our children and our grandchildren, who are eventually not only going to have to pay all of the taxes that are being cut right now, but all of the interest on it as well. And we're going to call that relief. It is just the Orwellian doublespeak, the newspeak of this. Of course, this came out of Frank Luntz's focus groups on behalf of the Republicans. You know, he's the guy who comes up with these words for them. So what they're going to do is they're going to make sure that our kids, our children, and our grandchildren are hit with even it's the same. It's voodoo economics. And this is the same thing Ronald Reagan did. $160 billion of the taxes that you and I are paying, federal taxes that you and I are paying this year. $160 billion of the taxes that you and I are paying this year, enough to put 2 million people through 4 years of public school, public education, for example, I mean, among other things. $160 billion is simply, mostly interest, a little bit of it is principal, on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in 1981 to create his so-called economic miracle. This is the thing. You give me a credit card with a $500,000 spending limit, and that I know I don't have to pay off, that my kids are going to have to pay off, and I can show you what it looks like to live high. And this is what these cons have done to us, and what they did to us in the 80s, and they all look back on it nostalgically because of course, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, to his credit actually, said, you know, this is wrong. I mean, he called it voodoo economics during the primary against Reagan, and when he became president, even though he had said, read my lips, no more taxes, he said, you know, we keep doing this, we're going to destroy this country. Well, even Reagan had figured that out, actually. One of the things that they won't tell you, or they, you know, I mean, you can easily look at the record, is that Reagan had one giant tax cut followed by 6 consecutive years of tax increases. Yes, yes, he did. And one of the reasons, by the way, that the cons were so exercised so upset that that George Herbert Walker had to say, read my lips, don't you? And then, of course, he had to raise taxes. But we're still paying the bill. We're still paying the bill in significant form. I mean, a big $160 billion. I mean, that's half our defense budget, more or less. That's a mind-boggling amount of money. That's four times what we spend on all human welfare programs at the federal level in the United States. That's how much we're paying on interest and a small amount of the principal on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up just in a 2 or 3 year period so that he could create enough of an economic good time that he might get himself reelected. And the cons, they just love to, oh, things were so nice under Reagan. Of course, we're paying for it now. And George W. wants to do the same thing again. Well, is, in fact, three tax cuts in 3 years. And let's reduce the tax on capital gains and dividends. You know, hey, for those people who sit around the pool waiting for the check to arrive, they don't have to pay into Social Security or Medicaid. I mean, that's for the working people, after all. Although they're eligible to get the benefits. And they only have to pay a maximum 15% tax rate. You won't find that on Rush Limbaugh's website, I guarantee you that. So anyhow, here from the Republican platform, prevent taxes on families from rising. Make the tax relief of 2001 and 2003 permanent and simplify the tax code. Yeah. Here's another one. Enact fundamental reforms to transition the Amtrak passenger rail system into operational self-sufficiency. Yeah, even though there's no country in the world that has a large and functional public transportation system, none. I lived in Europe for a year. I've traveled all around the planet. Public transportation is, you know, where it's completely pay as you go. Some of them are actually starting to approach it now that their infrastructure has been around for 30, 40, 50 years. And they privatized much of the rail system in England, and it was a disaster. I mean, immediately they started having, you know, because the private companies, they got to show a profit. The first imperative is to show a profit. The second imperative, of course, is to provide transportation. Well, if your first imperative is to show a profit, then you start cutting corners, and pretty soon you start having accidents, and people start dying. I mean, this is one of the reasons why we as a society say, you know, there are some things we're not going to give over to private for-profit corporations. If it's going to be done on a private basis, we can let a nonprofit do it, or we can have government do it. Accountable to we the people. But, you know, here they're trying to kill off Amtrak. And my response, you know, let's make it self-sufficient. Yeah, like the airlines. The airlines wouldn't exist without the air transportation, without the air transport system, the ATC. You know, the air traffic controllers who are paid for by you and me. Or without the Transportation and Safety Administration, TSA. Paid for by you and me. Or let's make it self-sufficient like our automobile systems, right? Yeah, well, I've got a car. I'm self-sufficient. What, you pay for the road? I don't think so. No, we collectively, we the people pay for it. And this is just nuts. We need more public transportation in the United States. Rail is one of the most efficient forms of public transportation there is, particularly with the new hybrid systems. I mean, hybrid technology that they're putting in cars right now, they have had in locomotives for 25 years, where they actually generate electricity when they start slowing down. They run the motors backwards, and they become generators. But no, the cons, that's not something that the, you know, Because it's not owned by a private corporation who's out there passing out campaign contributions. Let's kill it off. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Ed in New York is on the line. Is that New York City, Ed?
Yes, indeed.
Hey, Ed. Great to have you listening. How are you?
Well, Tom, can't wait till you get into town. I'll tell you, it's something here. I work right down the street from Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah?
And
which direction, if you don't mind my asking? Uptown, downtown?
Right on actually right on the corner of Madison, and I mean on 33rd and Broadway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
and,
very
right
close.
Now we've got to show our IDs and have, you know, some forms of ID to get into the building, and there's so many police out there, you can't help but bump into one or two of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But the best part is that, aside from all the security, it still doesn't stop the dissenters in us, because I've been going around putting pamphlets into all the newspaper boxes, and luckily enough, they've locked up some of them, and I've wound up seeing some of my pamphlets get locked inside the box so that no one can take them out either.
That's, what do the pamphlets say, by the way?
I was doing a running tally. It says 970 dead soldiers and a W with a slash through it.
Yeah.
And it says, how many more reasons do you need?
You know, I was amazed. I haven't here in Vermont. You think of Vermont as kind of like the People's Republic, very activist. There are very few bumper stickers. But when I was in Santa Fe over this last weekend, they were everywhere. Bush lied and nobody died. Clinton lied and nobody died. I saw that a half a dozen times. Another one was, without terror, he's got nothing. That was another one. You know. So anyhow, we're just about out of time here. 5 seconds.
Can't wait till you get here.
Okay, great. Thanks. I appreciate it. I appreciate the welcome and look forward to it. And maybe we'll even see you there. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. The pill that will help you escape the Matrix.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back.
Oh, what a great music. Oh.
20 makes you, it's kind of martial. Anyway, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, there's so much to this Republican platform. It's just absolutely fascinating. In some cases, horrifying to read. Let's take a couple of phone calls here first, though. 1-866, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alan, a trucker in Virginia, listening to us on radiopower.org. Hey, Alan, what's up? Alan, if you are listening, there is a delay. You need to listen to the phone and not your radio. So I'm going to put you back on hold, and we're going to go to Chuck from Los Alamos, New Mexico. Whoops, hang on. Hold on just a second, Chuck. There we go. We'll try to... Hopefully we've recovered, Alan. Chuck, you there? No. Well, that's strange. What's going on with the phone system here? I don't get it. Nothing is muted. Phone line should work. And it's not. Chuck, I'm sorry. If you can hear me, I cannot hear you. So I'm going to have to just... we'll have to fix this during the break. I'm going to have to put this back on hold. It's odd. I'm not hearing anything. Huh. I don't get it. Oh, there we go. Okay, I got to figure it out now. There we go. Okay, let's try it again. Alan, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, Alan, I'm sorry. It's the wonders of technology. What's up?
I listened to a speech last night that Jimmy Carter made in 1976.
Yes.
And if I understood him right, he said that energy independence is more important than inflation or recession. What do you think about that?
Well, the reality is that inflation or recession within limits, I mean, you know, not looking at, like, for example, what happened in the 30s, that some would attribute to the Treaty of Versailles. And the decisions that the German government made about war reparations to pay it back, you know, to massively inflate their currency and wipe it out. But short of that, inflation and recession are things that we'll get through. But if we run out of energy, it's going to cause an economic crisis that will make inflation and recession look like a picnic, not to mention larger problems like famine. So I would agree with Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
And your thoughts on that?
Well, I think he's one of the best presidents we've had.
I agree.
In my lifetime.
I agree.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the call, and thanks for raising that. Yeah, Jimmy Carter not only was one of the most competent presidents in terms of understanding how things work. I mean, the guy was a nuclear scientist. He when he was in the Navy, he worked on nuclear submarines, and he actually was a nuclear scientist, in addition to owning a peanut farm, right? So his family farm. But he was also, I think, one of the most high-integrity people that we've ever had as president. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program. We finally got the phones working.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, listen, I heard your comment about all the bumper stickers in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting because in 2000, the county I live in, which is incredibly conservative, was overwhelmingly for Bush. But when you drive down the streets of this place now, for every Bush-Cheney bumper sticker or lawn sign, you probably see four for Kerry.
Yeah. You know what? You know what surprised me? Whoa. There we go. Things are still strange with the funds. It's the tail end of Mercury retrograde, right?
Exactly. It ends tomorrow.
Yeah. One of the things that I found really interesting, which I have not seen before anywhere in the United States, was I walked around downtown Santa Fe on Saturday or Sunday, whichever it was. In any case, for a couple of hours, you know, just walking around shopping and looking at the stuff, you know, window shopping. And there were people on just about every corner from the DNC, you know, promoting Kerry's candidacy. And oddly, rather than trying to register voters, they were raising money. I had not seen that before, and it made me very skeptical at first. I thought it was like the Moonies, you know, somebody hustling. But apparently it's real.
No, Tom, it's absolutely real. In this, like I said, pretty conservative town I live in, I had a knock at the door two or three times over the last 3 months. Young guy coming up and saying, we're here to register people, and, you know, and he had a Democratic National Convention or conference
committee. Great. That's great. They're out there doing the canvassing.
They are.
Chuck,
they
are. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the info. Great to hear from you. It's 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Can you put a price on the soul of a city? Hell yes, barks Michael Bloomberg, mayor of the Big Apple itself. Sounding like a hustler hawking stolen goods on a street corner, the mayor is telling any corporation that'll listen that he's willing, even eager, not only to sell the soul of New York City, but sell it on the cheap. His gambit is to peddle the naming rights of such city-owned landmarks as bridges, subway stations, tunnels, and parks, allowing the historic names of these public places to be plastered over with corporate monikers and logos. How charming. Halliburton could take the Brooklyn Bridge. Viagra could put its stamp on Central Park. Walmart could take the Grand out of Grand Central Station. Rupert Murdoch could rename the Times Square subway stop for his global empire. Donnie Trump could brand the Triborough Bridge, and Nike could change Union Square to Global Sweatshop Square. Bloomberg claims that his effort to corporatize the soul of the city is necessary because of severe budget constraints. Yet, pathetically, his sell-off will raise only some $78 million, at best. That's an insignificant fraction of New York's $45 billion annual budget. The saving grace here might be that Bloomberg's soul sale could fail for the lack of buyers. Take the Queens Midtown Tunnel. What corporate PR department wants to put the company name on a roadway that is constantly jammed to a standstill and cursed daily by thousands of commuters? Then again, maybe Rolaids would want it. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bloomberg might know the price of the city's soul, but he knows nothing about its value. Our public resources ought to be named for the uniqueness of their place, or for people we consider heroes or otherwise worthy of our public acclaim, not for faceless, faraway corporations. To fight such corporate intrusion into our civic lives, go to commercialalert.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Another item from the Republican National Party platform. Oppose federal licensing of gun owners and national gun registration. Okay. Why stop there? How about opposing licensing of car owners and drivers? I mean, you know, people can kill people with cars. Well, okay, here's the argument that the other side would make. They'd say, well, cars travel. You actually don't need a driver's license to drive a car on your own property. Right? You can be 10 years old. You can drive a car on your own property. You don't need a license. You could have your license suspended. You could have 25 DUIs. As long as it's on your own property, you don't need a driver's license. Well, and therefore they say, but you know, because cars are going out on public property, then we, the public, have an obligation actually to license those drivers to make sure that they're behaving responsibly among us, among we the people. And I agree with that. So why not just say the same thing about gun owners? If you want to have a gun and use it on your own private property, you don't need a license. But if you take that gun off your private property, there will be penalties without a license. Without a permit, without having demonstrated that you know at least how well to use that gun and how, you know, and when and how appropriately to use that gun, as I know how to use my automobile. And that you have demonstrated, just like, you know, people get into their 70s and 80s and they've got to show up at the DMV and show that they actually can still see well enough to drive a car, that you actually have the intellectual, emotional, physical, whatever capacity to be able to appropriately use it. Well, that's a little too complicated, I think, for the Republicans. They just say, no licensing of gun owners or no national gun registration. Yeah, okay, well, then let's not license cars either. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Greg in Florida is on the line. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Greg? Where in Florida are you, by the way?
I'm in Port St. Lucie, about 45 minutes north of West Palm.
Oh, nice country there.
Yeah, it's all right. I'd rather be back in Massachusetts myself, but hey.
Yeah, here you go.
I can't afford a house there.
Make the best of where you are. So what's up?
That's right. Hey, I stumbled across a book online. See, I'm in the Merchant Marine, so I travel around the world.
Uh-huh.
And I can download e-books.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to carry my laptop than, you know, 85 pounds of books for
sure.
A 4-month tour.
Sure.
So I got one called The Gangs of America. You ever heard of it?
Ted's an old friend of mine. In fact, Ted was used to own a publishing company 15 years ago and published the first book that I ever wrote.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
So I was reading it, and I'm hearing you talk about unequal protection, and they sound really similar.
Yeah, they are. They both deal with the same issues.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of just stumbled across this because I thought it was Gangs in New York.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
I thought it was that, and I downloaded it, and I started reading, and I really got into it because I've been a union guy my whole life.
Yeah, no, Ted. Go ahead.
I said, I'm really against, like, corporate power and everything. And their person, like, he really explained it to me real well. It was kind of dry a lot of parts, but it's a really, really good book.
Yeah, yeah. Ted wrote an excellent book. I think Unequal Protection is also an excellent book. He and I had quite a bit of correspondence when he was writing that. I had pretty much just finished writing Unequal Protection when he was writing Gangs of America. And, you know, sent him a copy of it. And we had a lot of the same sources. We know a lot of the same people. Ted did just a marvelous job of illustrating it. He's got some great metaphors in there that I wish I had thought of.
He's got some stuff like some quotes like how afraid people I consider our founding fathers, like even Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
He's not really a founding father, but
one of the icons.
One of our greatest presidents ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got a letter to William Elkins where he's really expounding on how bad it's going to be for these corporations to take over.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, I was going to read it to you, but I don't want to bore your audience. So I can pick up the book after they pick up yours.
There you go. Well, either one. I mean, you know, it's as an author, of course, you always love it when people read your books. But the little secret that most people don't know, it's funny. I did this book signing in Santa Fe the other night, and they must have sold, I don't know, 100 books or more, because we had like 350 people show up, and there was a long line. Authors get about 10 cents a book. So, you know, it's like it's a $20 book, but, you know, I'm making 10 cents a book on it. So whether you buy Ted's book or you buy my book or you buy both of them, read them. Because that's why I put a lot of the chapters from Unequal Protection are actually free online, what I consider some of the most important chapters. If you just go to tomhartman.com and click the corporate rule section, or you can go to unequalprotection.com and it takes you to the same place, and it's all right there free and online. So.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not looking for just free. But
yeah
I got one of your books. I got Call to Take Back America. I can't think of the exact
Yeah,
title,
We the People, the comic book.
I gave it out to like 15 people so far. I'm waiting to get back from my brother.
Didn't they do a great job with that? I just wrote the words. I mean, you know, Neil Cohn, who did the illustration, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, the guy who put the thing together in the first place. They just did a great job with it. Anyhow, Greg, thanks for the call. And I agree with you. Gangs of America by Ted Nace is a marvelous book, highly recommended, and gets into the same issues as Unequal Protection. We need a dozen more books out there talking about that
same
stuff.
Hey, Tom, keep talking truth to power, bro.
I'll do it. And you too.
Tag, you're it.
Pass it along. Okay, thanks a lot, Greg. Good to hear from you. 22 minutes before the hour. Let's see here. Work for an energy policy that increases production. This is actually in the Republican platform. Work for an energy policy that increases production. That's what we need to be. The average European consumes 1/7 as much energy as the average American. I'm not talking about all of Europe, you know, including like Bulgaria, where they probably consume 100. Just Western Europe. Average Western European, the French, the Germans, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the British, 1/7 the average amount of energy as Americans. And a lot of it is because they have very, very good public transportation systems, by the way. And, of course, as mentioned earlier, the Republican Party wants to undo that, you know, enact fundamental reforms to transition the Amtrak passenger rail system into operational self-sufficiency. Yeah. Your car is actually, you know, it's absolutely free to operate your car. It's a total free enterprise kind of thing. Not really. No, you've got these roads, and the roads are paid for by tax dollars and. Or airlines, you know, you've got the TSA and you've got the air traffic system. It's paid for with tax dollars. Here's another one. Remove unnecessary barriers. Don't you love the use of language? They really do focus groups on these things. Just, you know, Frank Luntz in particular, just to death. I mean, they just remove unnecessary barriers to domestic natural gas production and support development of the Arctic Natural Wildlife Refuge. Sounds like we're going to develop the wildlife there, you know. It's reform high schools and early education. Of course, they're not mentioning the fact that this report just came out about how the charter schools are, the private corporate charter schools are dramatically underperforming public schools. You know, if you saw that was about 2 weeks ago. Didn't get a lot of play on the conservative side of the press. There were a few of them that seemed to be doing okay. In fact, I saw one editorial about one of the private schools that was being successful. But you know, and I should admit I have a dog in this fight. I'm the president of the board of directors of the Hunter School, which is a private nonprofit. I am not paid for what I do. Never received a penny from them. But it is a private nonprofit school, principally for children with attention deficit disorder over in New Hampshire. And we take all the kids that the public schools can't work with. But the reality is that it's rather expensive. It's rather difficult by the time these kids have been so badly damaged by the public schools. Healthcare, here's back to the Republican platform. Healthcare, reduce lawsuits through litigation reform. Yeah. We find, those of you who have seen the reports, we find recently that that litigation, tort reform, that litigation, lawsuits, are responsible for about 0.1% of the total cost. They say, well, why is health care, malpractice insurance going up so badly? You know, malpractice insurance rates have doubled and tripled in the last couple of years for doctors. You know why? It's got nothing to do with lawsuits. Lawsuits have been steadily going down for the last 5 years. The average claim is down around $35,000, $40,000 now. It has nothing to do with lawsuits. Well, then why do the prices go up so much? Well, part of it, of course, is that the insurance companies are more profitable than they ever were. But the biggest part of it is that insurance companies, the way insurance works is the insurance company takes your money and eventually, you know, is going to spend that money back out again, right? Like the one that everybody understands is death insurance. They call it life insurance, but it's really death insurance. And you pay into it as long as you're alive, and when you die, they pay you or your estate or whoever you designate. Well, what are they going to do with that money between the time that you pay into it and the time that you die? They invest it. And the insurance companies have been very heavily invested in the stock market, which has dropped over 20% in the last 3 years. And surprise, surprise, and some of them have been very heavily invested in tech stocks and in other stocks that were very speculative. And surprise, surprise, the insurance companies have lost billions, with a B, billions of dollars in their investments in the stock market. Now, you're not going to hear the cons talking about this because out of the other side of their mouth, they're saying, we ought to privatize Social Security and have everybody put their money in the stock market. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they're saying, these malpractice insurance rates are going through the roof. Well, the reason they're going through the roof is because the insurance companies have to make back the money that they lost with their investments in the stock market. And the only way they can make that money back, is by raising the rates on doctors. And I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, the AMA is aware of this. Actually, I got my information from the Wall Street Journal. It's out there. It's all over. This is no secret. I mean, you're not going to hear right-wing talk show hosts talk about it. You're not going to hear Alan Greenspan. You're not going to hear the cons talking about it. But it's no secret. It's not like, some conspiracy theory thing here, something you only find on this secret website. You got to know the password. No, it's in the newspapers. Come on. Health insurance, malpractice insurance premiums for doctors have gone up because the insurance companies have been losing money on their investments. The actual payout that the insurance companies have been making from when doctors actually harm people. By the way, the insurance companies only have to pay when somebody gets harmed, right? But the amount that they've been paying when real people get really harmed by incompetent doctors, drug addicted doctors, has been going down steadily for years. And by and large, the same is true of product liability insurance, that whole area that they broadly call tort reform. All of these insurance companies are raising their rates because their investments are going down. But the cons are not going to tell you about that. Instead, we find on the Republican platform, we need to reduce lawsuits through litigation reform. Well, why is that? Because they don't want you to have a voice. If you or I are harmed, there's a very small percentage of doctors ever get sued. if you hear that a doctor in your area has been sued, particularly more than once, I don't have the numbers right in front of me. My recollection is that fewer than 5% of doctors are ever sued, and that 1% of doctors account for more than half of all the lawsuits. And if those numbers, which are from memory, are not absolutely accurate, they're very, very close. So what you've got is you've got, you know, a medical fraternity that protects its own. You got a few bad doctors out there. And the medical industry really ought to clean house. I mean, they should be doing something about that. What's going to force them to do that? People getting injured and suing. And it's not just the insurance industry. I mean, why was it that they stopped making cars that blow up when you have impact? You know, the side saddle gas tanks on the GM cars, the Pinto, why did they change these? Well, largely because of lawsuits. And Ralph Nader actually had a lot to do with that. Like the Center for Auto Safety came out of the whole Pinto debacle. The ability of you and me, my ability, your ability, to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves against criminal behavior or just simple incompetence, but incompetence that should be regulated. So you could argue that it still is, by some, at least by a moral definition, criminal behavior. The ability to protect ourselves is our legal system, pure and simple. And the cons want to take that away. They want to say, you know, corporation can still sue you. You don't pay your phone bill, they can come after you. They can garnish your wages. They can take your home. They can, you know, they can put you in collection. They can harass you forever. Corporations can still sue humans, but humans can't sue corporations anymore. That's called tort reform. If this sounds weird to you, then, you know, welcome to the club. Okay, here we go. Endorse limits on stem cell research. This is in the Republican platform. Yeah, maybe, you know, as Laura Bush said the other day, well, you know, maybe it'll help people someday, but not now. So, you know, why bother? I mean, I'm not literally her words, but it certainly was, you know, the implication of what she was saying. We're giving people false hope. These people who are watching their relatives, you know, Alzheimer's disease, other diseases, you know, let's not give them false hope. And let's not do the research. It's like, can you imagine if Louis Pasteur, back in, what are the 1870s, I think, whenever it was, if Louis Pasteur was sitting around going, well, you know, it does look like there's some bugs under the microscope, and maybe it'll lead to something significant, but wouldn't want to give people false hope. I think I'll just forget about it. Yeah, yeah. Welcome to Republican Logic, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Phobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
I'm Sarah Turner, and this is a WIN feature story. It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increased by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Our members understand that they're not only standing up just for themselves, but they're standing up really for the affordable health care that everybody deserves. That in this country, unless we're going to be standing up for this, we're not going to see any change. So that we hope that our actions not only result in a good contract that we can all feel good about, the employer and the workers, but we also hope that this is going to be drawing attention to this issue so that we can have our elected officials be more responsive to this and to get us a good health care plan in this state and in this country.
No further talks are scheduled with a federal mediator. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
Democracy is coming, says Leonard Cohen. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oppose federal licensing of gun owners. I told you about that.
Democracy is coming.
Yeah, reject quotas and preferences based on skin color, ethnicity, or gender. This in higher education, civil rights from the Republican National Convention. Sounds nice. Sounds nice. Reject quotas and preferences. But what about legacies like George Bush used to get into college? No, we're not going to be opposed to that. Not to those quotas and preferences that are nearer to rich white guys. No. Fight the approval of judges the Republican Party calls activists to prevent rulings in areas such as same-sex marriage, abortion rights, and the use of the Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah, they would like to go back to an era where if a woman got an abortion, she went to prison. It's funny, this whole thing. I remember I was in Ireland, must have been 20 years ago or more. And I'm sure one of our Irish listeners, because whenever I talk about Ireland, I get email from people in Ireland, particularly when I'm wrong. I was in Ireland some time back, a few decades ago, and there was a billboard, and it showed a child and his mother, and he was crying and holding out his hand to her, and she was just a little distant from him, and it had this very kind of tragic look to it. And it said, vote no on, Proposition 11 or whatever, or Initiative 16 or whatever they called it. And I didn't know what it was, but it piqued my curiosity, so I asked somebody. And they said, we're trying to decide whether or not to legalize divorce. And, if it's true, if these guys are really worried that gay marriage is going to be the end of the institution of marriage, why not just do as Ireland had done up until 20 years ago, more or less, during that election, they actually decided to legalize divorce. Why not just make divorce criminal? I mean, if you're worried about keeping families together, it was very difficult, virtually illegal in the United States for a long time, and in many Catholic countries, many Muslim countries. Who knows? Anyhow, tomorrow I will be broadcasting from the Republican National Convention. We will see you there then. Thanks today to Rama for engineering our program. Marvelous job he did. Thanks to Louise for producing it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. To Jay for our theme music. To the folks in our chat room for showing up. And to you. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.